OOMA.com.
Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan, and today we're going to talk about several controversial transportation issues in the Tampa Bay region. Well, some of them are controversial. Some will be, I think, pretty straightforward. And our guest in the studio today is Hillsborough County Commissioner Pat Kemp. We will take your calls. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can also email DJ@WMNF.org. You can text us at 813-433-0885. So I just want to welcome my guest now. Welcome back to WMF's Midpoint, Commissioner Kemp.
Thank you so much. Always happy to be here. Feels like home.
Yeah, and I should tell people that it may feel like home, and it may be a familiar voice to you, because several years ago, Commissioner Kemp had a show here on, she hosted Last Call on Tuesday evenings, if I remember correctly.
I think you're right. I had to think too.
Yeah. So, well, thanks for joining us. And we're going to talk about lots of different transportation issues in Hillsborough County and even in the region. And, you know, I think the most interesting one maybe to talk about, the one that's gotten the most traction in the last week or so, is there was a vote last Wednesday in the MPO. And you can maybe tell people what that is, the Hillsborough County Metropolitan Planning Organization, which you're a part of. And the vote was a unanimous vote to study what's called Boulevard Tampa. So maybe begin with, what is the MPO?
Well, I always think the MPO, it's confusing, the Metropolitan Planning Organization. I think it's a confusing name. People don't really understand what the MPO is and what it does. But I always think, and some of the MPOs have changed their names. I've been wanting ours to change our name to the Transportation Planning Organization. That, I think, makes a lot clearer what their function is. And instead it's the Metropolitan, I don't know what. And then other places change their names to something that would give you no indication of what their function is, in my mind. But so think of it, Transportation Planning Organization for Hillsborough County. That's what the MPO is. And they were set up, actually, in the 70s, transportation planning organizations, while you might think that they are local, they actually are under federal mandate. They are federally required of local communities to have, if the local community reaches a metro area over 50,000 people. Once it gets that big, it becomes an urbanized area, and it's required to have a transportation planning organization like that. And the role is a role of what the reason they were set up is because, as many of us know, in the 60s and in the 50s, the highway department, as it was, the National Transportation, National Highway Administration, virtually across America, ripped through communities with major highway projects. And even by design, sometimes those projects were aimed at African-American and Hispanic, or as we call here, Latino communities. They were aimed at those to deal with what they said or characterized as blight, but were actually thriving the deep and important fabric, especially like in Tampa, of Central Avenue, of African community. It was a heart of the African American community, commerce, everything else. It was a engaged, thriving place. And also Ybor City that they went through, again, of the Latino, as is said here, community with major interstate roadways, I-4, I-275, just ripping these places apart. Well, that was done all over the nation through major areas and literally targeting African-American, and there were fewer Hispanic communities, and tearing them apart and just ruining their centers of commerce and community and living. And so the MPOs were created, I think, in the 70s, and they were supposed to no longer, with the Highway Administration, just be able to go roughshod and use our federal taxpayer dollars, that's what was paying for it, to decimate and destroy communities to just move cars through. And it was sought to be a more balanced approach where the local communities would have a place where they could be part of those decisions, feedback to them, push back on them, and be part of the process that decided how their taxpayer dollars were spent in transportation. I think in a lot of places, in reality, like happens, those start to become, in many cases, compliance by MPOs. I was thinking about I can't come up with a phrase for it right now. And I was just getting all kinds of hits from all over the country. The MPOs in large part just kind of going along because they're under enormous pressure from powers that be, from FDOT, especially in the state of Florida. FDOT is especially strong. I haven't been in other states to quite measure it, but to be under and doing whatever rubber stamp is what I one time did rubber stamp MPOs and Googled it, and I just got hits everywhere. And so, I think it's even on the MPO, it can be hard to actually, I think, represent the communities and the great economic interests that have been destroyed when the roadways went through. The way the European roadways go, which is what actually Eisenhower had modeled our interstate system after, the difference is that the European autobahns and roadways would connect cities, but they didn't go through cities. We took it and made it so that here they go through cities and, were very, very destructive. And to this day, that path of destruction really reverberates and, really affects the communities it's in. I happen to live very close to I-275 going north-south in Seminole Heights. And, as the impacts of industrialization was moved out of the cities and they weren't so dirty and didn't have those problems, we were very much plagued by these interstates that created huge noise. That's a huge thing that occurs. Sometimes actually some light issues. What we've just learned from watershed studies, I'd say in the last 2 years, is the impacts that we have from these in terms of the air quality being really devastating if you live close to an expressway. In fact, I've worried about the fact that I raised my children close to the surrounding air of an expressway. That will still be an issue for decades to come until we go all electric. The noise will be, even with the quiet electric motors, I guess a lot of the noise I've read about this comes from the trajectory of the vehicle against the wind, the friction, mm-hmm. creates a lot of the noise that occurs. So those impacts will be there. But the impacts of what they do to communities when you lay massive amounts of asphalt to accommodate cars, single, usually in our country and in this community, is single occupancy vehicles to accommodate them and nothing else can be just a really destructive community, can destroy communities in a big way and economic prosperity.
And so that's setting the stage of what has happened in the past. And, I-275 cutting through parts of West Tampa, parts of Ybor City, Seminole Heights, Tampa Heights, and the historically black sections of Central Avenue, for example, in Tampa. And now there's this idea called Boulevard Tampa. And it was a master's thesis by this gentleman named Josh Frank to talk about taking out the highway that was built over parts of Tampa and putting it at grade, a boulevard, kind of maybe on the European model. For a while, this was an idea that a lot of people thought were talking about, but it was, it was maybe a little bit of a kind of a wishful thinking. until last week when the MPO voted unanimously that they will study it. So how does that translate into what actually might happen, that there's a study versus are these studies things that end up happening?
Oh, we have a plethora of studies. I hear it all the time. But a study is a first step. And until you can get that truly through your MPO as a study, that's truly where you take your first steps. Now, this study idea has been going around in terms of Boulevard Tampa for a few years. Josh has made several presentations at big groups. It was discussed. FDOT said that they were studying it in the last couple years.
Just so people know, FDOT is Florida Department of Transportation.
Yep. And they had said that they were looking at it closely in the last several years, and particularly under the old direction of FDOT, I was very skeptical. We do have a new secretary here, who I think is a much better fit for our community, and does have dialogue, I think, and is working with the community and understands the community issues to some extent. I think there has been some shift in our District 7, our local FDOT, and I'm happy that that's going on. But I still had skepticism about the fact that there was serious consideration about what is Boulevard Tampa, which I want to describe, because people get it confused all the time, and I understand why, and I think this is part of the problem with it. You know, you hear about I-275, and there's a part that is north of the downtown interchange to Barris Avenue up and connects to 75. I'm going to be talking about the Boulevard plan is that part. Mm-hmm. The other part, and that's in the north-south part. The other part that's called I-275, but I think rightly should just be called I-4, because it's a continuation of I-4 across the state. And that's the part that goes east-west, that we're not dealing with that as we deal now. But I've already heard all kinds of misinformation, like quoting the numbers of I-275 as it goes east-west, which are much bigger than the numbers that it goes north-south by 50,000 cars a day.
Fewer people travel in the north-south section.
Far fewer. Some of the big areas, the big numbers on I-275 east-west are 230,000, you know, or I think that's the highest one I saw when I was looking through the numbers. As you go on I-275 north, the biggest one is at Sline Hillsboro. That's 180,000. So that's 50,000 fewer than the big ones before. And that's split, you know, going north and south, those numbers, the way they go. Also, when you get the numbers drop dramatically as you get past Fowler, from downtown to Fowler, the numbers are much more robust. For instance, you get, right at Bush, let's say Sly and Hillsborough is 181. Going north to Bush is 160. So it drops between Sly and Bush by 20,000 cars a day. Then you go to Fowler and you get 151. So it drops by 9,000 as you approach Fowler. You approach Fletcher and it goes to 121. So we're getting a 30,000 drop. And you go to Bears and it goes in half of Fletcher to 63, or one third of Sly and Hillsboro. The part that's north of Fowler and Fletcher has been under capacity for years and doesn't really have, there's no issues with that. There's no surrounding development. The part that's between Fowler, Fletcher to downtown is hugely locally used. It's used between the exits in there. It acts as a local road in many ways, far more than it acts as any connecting road to the region. And so a lot of times people will quote numbers that go from the east-west, which I consider should be I-4, fake I-275, to, you know, and put them onto the north-south part of it, which is a much more of a local road.
And just to summarize everything you just said, essentially, if you're going from downtown Tampa to I-275, taking I-275 north from downtown Tampa to I-75, there are a lot of people that get off at I-4, and more people get off at each stop as you go along than get on. So it's not really used as a throughway, really. Hardly anyone goes from the Tampa airport, let's say, up to I-75, taking I-275 right. All the way.
Oh, you're totally right.
So it's a local road.
The other things that are not the obvious impacts that people might not think about in terms of moving traffic are that when you put a road, an interstate, in the middle of a community, and the way that they have done it thus far, although that's even changing somewhat, is that they build up solid walls to the sides of it, and they block off all the grid. So you ruin the connectivity that would move traffic through in any reasonable way by taking away the grid. The other thing is they make the walls slanted up to the top of the expressway so that it takes up all this extra room to the sides that you could have for, you know, whatever you might. And it turns out to be significant acreage. Also, those loop-de-loop, massive exit ways that they do to accommodate traffic at certain speeds or to accommodate how they move things are, again, just big land grabbers, and that they hurt, again, they hurt the local community. Could have employ all that for local economic development, for housing, jobs, parks, whatever. I mean, those are, again, impacts, but also for connectivity so that they can get through the local area, and it could move traffic much more. I mean, it just, when you put a road through a local community and make it that, I've heard some bemoaning like, well, it could work a lot better if none of these people that were living there would get on it and they would just use the local roads. Well, one thing is that they've cut off all the connectivity, but two, that's the truth of how it's used. So, I mean, you know, that to say that somehow we should get all these impacts and not even have access to it is kind of astonishing, but it wouldn't be used very much if we weren't using it. It would, you know, just like it is to the north, it's it'll be under capacity for decades to come. So
our guest is Hillsborough County Commissioner Pat Kemp, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. It's 12:23 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan, and you're listening to Midpoint Monday. And we do have some people on the phone, but I'm going to hold off on phone calls for just a second. So if you're on the line, just stay with us for a second, if you don't mind. And if you'd like to call in, it's 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So you've painted a picture of what it looks like now with the interstate running through the neighborhoods going north from downtown Tampa to I-75. What would Boulevard Tampa look like? What is this idea called Boulevard Tampa?
Well, that's part of the reason to do a serious study to move into that category, is to try to figure out what it might look like and what things need to be done. I've been a big supporter of creating parallel to that the CSX tracks. Those are used for freight now, and they go from what everybody has been begging some tracks to go from, and that's USF to downtown. They go from directly from USF, right from the campus. Basically, I've stood at Fowler and 30th and looked across the Botanical Gardens. They are there, plus right away extends out to 56th Street into Temple Terrace. But they go along the tracks. They go south through the most dense transit-rich area in the entire region. These tracks go through, and they go down to Ybor, and they go across downtown, and they go through South Tampa, all of which apparently for CSX is available for sale. The other place they go is another line, goes across Bush Boulevard. I'm sure all those people out there that have been crossing it know. They go, they travel along east-west along Bush Boulevard. They actually have a freight operation to this day that goes into the airport every day from the north side at Hillsborough or a line ball, whatever, that is running east-west. It goes through West Chase, goes over in Pinellas to safety harbor to Clearwater. So, I mean, it could be a route for Clearwater to the airport, which I keep hearing things about, but it goes right down from Clearwater into St. Petersburg. And amazingly, the tracks are buried in concrete at the Tampa Bay Rays Stadium. And then it goes north from the USF area, Busch Gardens area, north to Lutz, through the county and on up to Brooksville. But I say this because it's a parallel route from downtown from USF to downtown. This, you know, that could move significant numbers of people if we had that, stood that up. And we can do it for way less than we've done interstate, what they call improvements or interstate changes for. I think part, so in terms of the other thing is that, and I've said this forever, it's never been confirmed, but no one will ever also contest me on this, is that if you, for anyone around here who's watched, some years ago now, they in the middle of the interstate, it used to be open in the center, and I'm talking I-275 north of the interchange up, and they went and they secured all that and put roadway in there. So it's one roadway connection now. It's no longer, that inner opening was closed. And the lanes sit there now and they're not used. You might notice that if you ever drive, that you can see on the inner lanes, there's these lanes that could be used basically, or maybe a little repainting and changing a little. But those were the lanes that were supposed to be the TBX lanes that were supposed to be, thank God we don't have that, they won't be surge price lanes, and they would have been massively unsafe. They were just going to put separators up there and make that. That's not going to be, but now they're looking at using those. But because all that construction was done, I think there's a terrible reluctance at this time, and I don't know how much that was, a mile to put that in, but that is recent. They haven't even been used, and they're going to have to, if they ever want to use those, there's going to have to be some things that are done, which is, you know, what we're looking at right now. They'd like to open the use of those lanes, I think, and that would accommodate. They would then put sound walls up, which in my area have never ever had sound walls all these years.
Even though homes are right next to the interstate.
Yeah, it's amazing. But it wasn't something that they had to do back in the day. And with this, they would have new capacity. And so I guess that gives them the allowance to put up sound walls without okaying that new capacity. They can't put up sound walls. But I think that that's a significant barrier at this time to them rethinking. I'm just going through some of the considerations that are, I think, you know, in part of this. But if you flattened it all out, you'd have all kinds of extra acreage, like I said, from the big, you know, exits.
The cloverleaf exits.
Cloverleaf exits, but also just the way the walls extend up. If you look out and, you know, what they, the blockage in between, you could open up all of that, you know. You also could think about, significantly think about real transit there, no matter what transit it is. I think our biggest transit ways now, our biggest bus routes are Nebraska and Florida, which are on either side of the interstate and need to remain that way, because they both serve some of our biggest ridership. Another that goes right through there, one of our biggest ridership routes, is Hillsborough Avenue. And more would be, I think, well used all across there if we only had more buses, more frequency, which hopefully someday with the sales tax being freed up, we can create the kind of transit system that we should have. But certainly we could deploy much more transit. We could have bike lanes. We could have the CSX tracks moving people in a parallel way. There's all kinds of opportunity for moving traffic. The traffic would certainly come into stopping, but you know, at the intersections, of course, it wouldn't be necessarily speeding through, of course, but it would be a place where pedestrians could traverse, which they cannot do now, or bicycles cannot do because of the wall that is I-275. They have to go down to the few openings in the wall to get through it. Communities across America are starting to do this, or have done it, or have big things underway about doing it. One of the advantages some of the other places have is that they have been undergrounding the interstates, and they've been covering them with grass parks and caps for at least a part of it. You know, we don't have that opportunity, as far as I can tell, here to do that because of our karst rock underneath, and, you know, that we're not allowed to, we cannot have, I say not allowed, but we can't have subways or underground tunnels here because of our, the sensitive, the underpinnings of, you know, this area geologically.
And the water table is very close to the surface as well.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so this, my guest is Pat Kemp. She's a Hillsborough County Commissioner, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. It's 12:31 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan, and we're talking about Boulevard Tampa, and that's one of the ideas that's being considered for part of taking away part of section of I-275 north of downtown Tampa from the I-4 interchange all the way up to I-75. It's an idea at this point, and we'd like to know what you think about the idea. Give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. We'll continue to talk about Boulevard Tampa. We'll also get to the ferry, maybe an express bus service that Commissioner Kemp has some opinions about that we'll talk about in just a bit. But I want to read an email or two before we go too much further. I also should say that if you're you could be watching us on facebook.com/WMNF News if you'd like. And David says, thanks for bringing Pat Kemp on your show today. I like the idea of making the Cross Bay Ferry permanent, but I also think we need to expand more of the Cross Bay bus service. Those buses should not only be more frequent, but also run on the weekends. Also, I think a bus traversing the Skyway Bridge between Pinellas and Manatee counties is needed. Let me read one more quick email before we answer David's questions. And this person, Bubba, says, I was impressed that Pinellas County citizens pushed back on interstate expansion plans in the 1970s. I don't think this is widely known. So do you want to address either of those? I guess we could transition to the ferry. We'll, you know, I'm sure callers might still call back and talk about Boulevard Tampa. But David was asking about the ferry service.
Yes. Thank you, David. But before I do the ferry, I'll do one more piece of information about the boulevard. This is from Streets Blog, which I read quite often. And it talks about tearing down highways is something of a trend in the U.S. According to the Congress of New Urbanism, known as CNU, 17 cities, including Rochester, Milwaukee, and San Francisco, have either committed to or torn down freeways since the 1980s. And I know I was in Portland when they, or after they did that in Portland, they were like kind of one of the leaders in all of this. And we know the Portland story, and they have, I mean, every other community is looking at them because they would only dream to have millennials there. I think that they've had to work harder in Portland because of their weather to make their place a paradise. And so they have. And we've, I think we've relied on people coming here no matter what because of our weather. And we haven't quite worked as hard to build the community that I think we need to have moving into the future to be the place that we want to be, in my mind. CNU, in its 2019 report, the Congress of New Urbanism, has named highways throughout the country that they say are ripe for removal, and listed number one, not necessarily in order of priority, is I-275 Tampa, Florida. So I'd just like to say that. And then I will go on to the buses and ferries in a regional way. Yes, I'm a huge supporter and have pushed for express bus on the Hillsborough side, and in fact was very much pushed frequent service of express buses in Hillsborough from Wesley Chapel going through USF, because that's where the populations is, and going across to I-275 and going down to downtown Tampa and over to the airport. At the same time, I found out that Pinellas County had no such express bus service, even though there was this huge momentum on their side to do something. I'm not even sure from some electeds over there, but I really pushed them to have an express. I brought it up at regional meetings from the dais that there was no express bus going from downtown St. Pete to Gateway to the airport, of which they said was a critical route. And so they added that there. So we do have a regional connection. My whole thing about this is right now FDOT is paying for some of those services. And I would like to see FDOT, and I'm not, this isn't up to our local, but this is kind of our state transportation terrible policy, that they don't support operations. And I really think that they need to be supporting robust express bus service operations that are connecting between counties and bigger points, not with frequent stops, not the local thing. That's what highways are for. Highways are for moving between big things. It's typically across the country the least used of your services in terms of high ridership. That's not where people typically ride between those big connections, but I would support that. I would support FDOT doing more robust service in that. I have been in very strong opposition to what was put forward, as they called it, BRT. I've maintained
BRT stands for bus rapid transit.
Thank you. I've maintained it's not really anything to do with a bus rapid transit system or even an express bus system. It's which are things that really rely on operational funds, which is what I'd like to see FDOT do for that more robust bus service, is to actually move people. Instead, they have this, I think it's just, I don't even know what to say about it. I think it's ludicrous that they're calling this regional transit thing. I call it the regional parking garage plan.
Before we get to why you call it that, which I think is going to maybe shock some people, let me just explain a little bit what it is. It's talking about an express bus, or you know, a fast bus service, or any a less frequent and fewer stops bus between St. Petersburg, the Gateway area, Tampa Airport, downtown Tampa, the USF area, and then going all the way to Wesley Chapel. So we acknowledge that there needs to be transportation in that corridor.
I've been pushing for it.
Exactly. And but you think that this is the wrong plan. First of all, it goes along the interstate, which I don't know, some people have criticized that.
But, and that's fine. You know, that's a different thing than the other stuff. But we've been putting 90% of our focus regionally on that and only on the interstates to the exclusion of everything else. But the other thing about it is just we've got the buses on it now that are operating. So let's just do more robust service and let's have the state pay for it since it's an interstate system. And they also had this ungodly number of stops originally. I was really criticizing them. And once I said like 7 stops. I think I had Wesley Chapel, USF Nebraska at Fowler, downtown airport, Gateway, and St. Pete. I guess that's 7 stops, you know. They had like 17 stops on this thing, but I discovered a 2015 study, our voluminous numbers of, wasteful studies that outlined, and I didn't even know about it. I stumbled on it when I was doing research online, that outlined that exact same thing for express buses to do as a recommendation. That makes sense. And I wasn't surprised that, you know, somebody beside, I mean, that was just it's just common sense. And for us to have come up with this, they were putting in these, it's a $455 million project. $430 million is spent on what they're calling multimodal centers. But from the dais, I say, well, what are the multimodes? I can't ever get any answer for that. But instead, it's 9,000, I'm not kidding, 9,000 parking spaces for a system that they're saying would move 330 people an hour. Not only that, they have no way that they know how to pay for operations of this system. So to me, like, the capital isn't the really big thing. People think of that as a big thing. What you have to do is think about the operations. That's why I say FDOT should pay for the operations of the express buses in the regions, because that is moving people, and that's the job that, you know, we should be doing instead of continually expanding only the interstates. Also, all the arterial roads are ignored or largely, I mean, we're just throwing traffic down on them. Hillsborough, Bush, Fletcher. I mean, the, you know, we throw traffic from the interstates on them, and they're, and they are state roads, and they're largely underfunded for the kinds of things that they need to go forward. I've also had a huge issue with anybody who travels across the bridge. Knows that you can get across the bridge much easier if you go from Tampa to St. Pete. You have a four-lane throughway. If you go to St. Pete, and why this ever occurred 15 years ago to Tampa, you have a two-lane freeway at some throughway. At some point, right at the bridge, it for some unknown reason, one of the lanes peels off and goes straight to West Shore Mall. Another lane goes up to the airport, but there's only two lanes through, and I've made a big deal of opening that up because there's the right-of-way there to do that. Why they ever built it that way, it creates a regional bottleneck, which I think could be largely done away with by opening that up. So right now they're temporarily, I think, fast-tracking a third lane on there, and I really have made a big deal of that because I don't understand how engineers, I don't understand how it ever got built that way, quite honestly. I think it's kind of shocking, like, that any person. And actually, the same thing happened on the I-275 connection to I-4, which 25 years ago, 30 years ago, as a neighborhood person in Seminole Heights, I looked at that on a board, you know, a storyboard thing or whatever. And I was like, oh, that will never work. That's going to have traffic backed up to Hillsborough and beyond, and never thought about it again. Then they actually built it. I thought it would never be built. It got built, and that's exactly what happened. And it was totally predictable by me in my 20s, knowing nothing, just looking at it, you know. So why those things get built. But I would love to move on to the ferries.
Yeah, so do you want to talk about the ferries now, or do you want to take a phone call?
Oh, okay, we can take a phone call.
Yeah, why don't we, if you don't mind, we'll take a phone call. It's 12:42 in the afternoon. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, and we're going to, and my guest is Pat Kemp, who is a Hillsborough County Commissioner, and we're talking about all sorts of transportation issues. We will talk about ferries in just a second. So far, we've talked about express buses, which she also has called this plan the regional parking garage plan, because it's 9,000 parking spaces to move 300 people an hour. And we are going to talk about the ferry, and we've also talked about the Boulevard Tampa. So let's hear from Becky in Seminole Heights. Hi, Becky.
Hey, Sean. I'm very happy to hear from you, or, you know, talk to you. And I think it's so funny because also I've always looked at 275 joining four and been like, who did that? How did that happen? It's so crazy. Anyway, I've mostly called because I am so excited about the Boulevard Tampa idea. I think it's genius. It's so obvious how much it would help the region move people more efficiently by huge numbers and impact everything quality life well. But my question for Pat would be, what sort of time frame would we be looking at, even the study, or then even like by the best idea, what if it actually was like, yes, let's do this? How long?
Things are always taking years and years. So I wouldn't hold my breath for sure. Right. But I think it's a great first step to start to do it. You know, I mean, typically, it's more than a decade, you know, and longer. We're talking about the future. We're talking about the long term. Sure. It took us a while to get here. It's going to take us a while to reverse course. But I'm really excited that we have a community that understands, cares enough, and that we're part of the future, because I think that's what is being looked at across the country, and you know that needs to be part of the conversation here too. So I think we need to just be watching this, and this is a big first step.
Okay.
Thank you for calling.
Anything we can do to like help support it or anything? Is there?
Well, I think, we passed it unanimously with the MPO, right. So it's going to be moving on. So, make sure that you're watching it. Make sure that your local representatives are, out there and involved and engaged in following it. We have a new county commission now that's largely five members of them are on the MPO. Your city councilors, three members of them, three city councilors are in the MPO. So I think just, keep watching, and thank you. You know, I think it's really important for community members to be aware and knowledgeable and be part of the change.
Thank you.
Becky, thanks so much for that call. Let's hear from Dave in Plant City. Dave, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
Hey, good afternoon. Hey, I did some freelance safety consulting with the DOT. It's kind of been minimal, but Kevin Dunn with the DOT and the infrastructure company, DBI Industries, but project manager Scott Houston, things like that, interstate signs, changed or modified, advisory signs on dangerous exit ramps, things like that, make the highways a little bit more safer and better understanding for the motorists how the roads behave. But I just wanted to ask this young lady, Ms. Kemp, about something she said. And she said somebody who had mentioned or picked 275 as a highway ripe to be removed.
Yes.
I'm not going into like a 10-minute dissertation on the subject. Why is that?
Why did they pick it?
No, why would 275 be ripe for removal?
Well, that's what, we've talked about it for an hour here, the last half hour, but that was the Congress of New Urbanism. You can look it up, Streets Blog, and read about it, but that's what they picked, and I was just naming their 2019 report.
And also, okay. There was a master's thesis by Josh Frank at the University of South Florida.
So the short version, like within like a 30-second answer, what would be the short version of the reason being?
Well, I think we've gone through that the last half hour.
You might have missed it.
Yeah, I know.
To connect the neighborhoods, and it's not used as a through as a way for people to go from before the beginning of the interchange to past to 275. It's more used as a local, and so the argument is to have people who are traveling locally stay on the local roads and have it connect the east and west sides of the highway.
It's relatively speaking, it's used as a local road. Much of the traffic on it, and it's much lower traffic when you go north of the interchange to I-275. In fact, the north part of it is under capacity for decades to come. A lot of the in-between is used for local use, and there's all kinds of alternative options that might come.
What's wrong with that highway being used for local traffic? What's wrong with that idea? I mean, why? It's a road. Just like any other road.
I'm not saying there's anything. You're saying as an interstate used as local traffic?
So they, are they talking about changing the designation or just removing it? I mean, it moves a lot of cars. And regardless
yeah.
of what
no, it's a,
any, road like any other road.
Yeah, as I just said, anything would be a long way off. They'll be doing studies. They'll be looking at all kinds of options. There's nothing wrong with them. In fact, I just made the argument that people would be using it or are using it now as a local road. And I've heard I've heard some people bemoan the fact that, it wouldn't be a problem if no one in the neighborhood used it, you know. That was all my reference to that.
Dave, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. And thanks for calling in from Plant City. And if you'd like to join the conversation, it's 813-239-9663. And we do have some more emails to get to in a minute, but I've been promising Commissioner Kemp that we could talk about the ferry.
Yes.
So right now we have ferry service between downtown St. Petersburg and downtown Tampa. And it's my impression is that it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's more for when you have a leisure time for tourists maybe rather than as a commuter option.
But no, I would say that's totally true because you only have one boat. But right now, actually, we don't have ferry service between downtown St. Pete and Tampa. It ended at the end of April.
Okay, I missed it.
Because it can only happen for 6 months because we lease a boat premium prices from New England that's being used during the summer months. And we can only lease one boat, and we have our ferry service, and first of all, there's not a heavy commute between downtown Tampa and downtown St. Pete anyway for work or anything else, because that's just not the way people commute. In Hillsborough County, 91% of the time that anyone turns their key to go to work, they end up in Hillsborough County. They're not crossing crossing the bridge. They're not doing other things. And that's true 88% of the time in Pinellas County when they're going to work, which is the big commute time that you focus on. When it's 45 minutes across in the water, you're never going to, you know, that's not really a great commuter route at all. So it mostly operates at night and in the weekends. Now, that being said, with that route, and for the 6 months, it has, the very first year we did it 2 years ago, and then we didn't bring it back for the middle year, and then we brought it back the next year. We had, the very first year we had projected 35,000 is the highest number that would use it. We got 42. This year, we were busting all records for the same season. We got well over 50, and it was leaving from a worse area in Tampa. And thank you to the aquarium for letting it be there, but it wasn't as easy for people to get to. It was sold out over and over and over again. So it's been, and it is well loved. We put out a survey the other day to people who had used the ferry in the last 6 months, and within 24 hours, we had responses by 2,200 people. And I think 1,800 or so said, keep us on your mailing list. And, 1,200 had comments about how much they loved it and what a great opportunity it was. So that the ferry there is very, very, has been wonderfully embraced, and communities all over America that can have a ferry service are getting ferry services, 19 of them in New York. Pensacola has already stood up two ferries with BP money in the time that we have, and we've just keep having this discussion and not being able to move forward. People talk about, I'm jealous of the transit that they're doing in, whether it be, Charlotte or Austin or Denver or wherever it is. None of them have the opportunity to deploy our waterways, which make for low infrastructure costs, amazing flexibility, and in federal terms, it's considered fixed guideway. It's a exclusive right of way. You never get stuck in traffic with a ferry. You can hold about three busloads of people in the ferries that we've had. So they've been really, really well used. The ferry plan, as it moves forward, and it's coming to the County Commission this Wednesday, the Hillsborough County Commission this Wednesday, I think it's on the agenda for about 11. I've been thinking about for time certain. I've been thinking about having people, if you come before 9, you can sign in and speak to the ferry project. We've gotten in hundreds of emails at this time in support of the ferry project already. I've been talking about it on Facebook and through my constant contact mail. And so have others. I also had a op-ed that went this weekend, Saturday, in the Tampa Bay Times. The week before, the Tampa Chamber did the op-ed. And those are all about connecting the ferry with South County that so wants the ferry to MacDill and to downtown Tampa, as well as St. Pete. The South County ferry would go from, we've changed the deployment location to Williams Park, already an existing park. That's used for boaters in South County. It could move thousands of people a day from South County to MacDill. Instead of going 35 or 40 minutes around, you go 13 minutes across. That's nice. What a great commuter ferry does. It is an amazing project. It would support all the other, we would be getting four ferries. One of them is kind of on standby. That's what you always do for a bus system. And then you have the other three ferries moving people at, we're talking about 12-minute headways, which we have nothing like that in our whole region, basically.
Does headway mean the time between?
Yeah. Amazingly, during commuter times, it would provide, it could take thousands of cars off the street for people who live in South Tampa, which when they heard the ferry project has been killed back and forth, they were just, contacting my office immediately because lines line up on both sides of MacDill in the morning. I can tell you MacDill is incredibly supportive of this project. I've been down to MacDill several times. I've met with brass at MacDill. They're very excited and on board with this project moving forward. The Tampa Chamber about 6 months ago came to my office and asked to meet with me. I did not know what they were coming to meet. And they came in and they said, we want to meet with you because we've been down to MacDill. And we asked them, what's the number, what can we do to help you all? And MacDill said, the number one project that you all can move forward is this ferry for commuter purposes. And to the extent that I've heard anything said about not serving the military, I'm just kind of actually taken aback. For one, it's a huge employer. And for two, it's taking a lot of cars off the road. But for three, maybe they should tell us then to stop subsidizing all the transit that we already give to South County to MacDill, which takes up a huge amount of our buses. They're big users of that and our subsidized van pool. So we are already hugely subsidized. But this makes sense as a project to move forward with. And then we can do a lot of the, we do that heavy commuter route. I could see it expanding in the future, but this is a viable, great thing. HMS Ferries, which are the ferry company that run ferries in New York and in Niagara Falls and in Seattle and all kinds of other places, have been working on this for a time. And honestly, I really want to hear about any transit project in the nation. HMS Ferries is now so convinced of the ridership possibilities on the ferry that what happens in other communities is the agency, whether it be HART or whether it be the city or county, own the project, and they bring in an operator for the project. And that is how HMS operates all over the nation. That's, when you bring in a private operator, that's what they do. In this case, and so you have to pay them. In this case, HMS said that they will take the risk of loss and the benefit of profit. So there will be no operational costs that we have to pay for 20 years moving forward. So this is strictly a capital investment. We own the capital if anything were to happen. But this could be an amazing, beautiful, robust way to move people as cheaply, as easily as possible with so little infrastructure. We are so lucky to have such low-hanging fruit here. So amazing, this opportunity that we have, that I really can't conceive of any reason not to be moving forward on this expeditiously.
And the Hillsborough County Commission will be voting on the ferries this coming Wednesday at around 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, and we're voting to kind of move through a two-year, probably could be up to two-year program to really do the final environmental studies, the final project design, the final building permitting, moving all those things and trying to come up with a final budget in terms of capital investment and final, who runs what where and how we move forward with it.
One concern earlier with the ferry that would go from MacDill to the South County is where is the environmental concerns of the port in the South, in South County? I'm not familiar with Williams Park. Where is that? Is that in Riverview? Or
it's farther north than the other place was. I never heard anything about the port being concerned about it. In fact, I don't know anything about that. But the environmental concerns that some people put forward with Schultz, but Schultz Park and Preserve, but that's no longer the area. It's Williams, and the port's not there. Mosaic is there.
Our guest is Hillsborough County Commissioner Pat Kemp, and we're near the end of the show, and so I want to let people know that you're listening to WMNF Tampa. So much more I want to have talk to you about.
We can make it another time.
That's true, we can. you know, I don't think we're going to have enough time to get to any of the calls, but let me read one of the emails that came in from the 813 area code that says, I wish we could reinstate the number 18 bus from Livingston and Veterans Hospital to downtown. Now there's not a way that I can get to the hospital or downtown, so thank you for that suggestion, the number 18 from Livingston and Veterans to downtown. So,
thank you for calling, and I think we're going to be able to do a lot of expansion. Those were cut because of budget cuts, and when the sales tax comes, I'd really like to, our focus will be our bus service. That is a focus for any place. So I'm looking, hopefully we can double and handle all kinds of issues.
And that's because of the All for Transportation surtax on the sales tax that was passed last November. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me on 88.5 FM today, Commissioner Kemp.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks so much for coming in. Pat Kemp is a Hillsborough County Commissioner. I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. I'm sorry I didn't get to all the phone calls. If you're still on hold, or if you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, give me a call at 813-238-8001, extension 114. I'll play your message next show. You can also join the conversation online at WMNF.org/news or Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. I want to thank our engineers Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero Mark Bureau will host Midpoint Tuesday. Coming up now is Executive Session with John Gilmore after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Thanks so much for listening.